This is Gnostic Media Research and Publishing's podcast, episode number 174. I'm your host, Jan Irvin. This episode is an interview with Mark Passio, part four. Mark hasn't been with us for over a year and a half. I was on his show a couple of times in the interim, but he hasn't been here with us for about a year and a half. And we've been talking about doing this show for quite some time. And this episode is titled, Balancing the Sacred Feminine and Masculine and Exposing New Age Bullshit, and is being released on Sunday, September 8, 2013. And this interview with Mark was recorded on Tuesday, August 30th, 2013. Mark Passio is an independent researcher, public speaker, radio talk show host, conference organizer, and freedom activist from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Mark has undertaken the task of assembling vast amounts of research in the areas of metaphysics, occultism, spirituality, symbology, and consciousness studies. In 2007, Mark began presenting this information in the form of a presentation series called What on Earth is Happening, with the intention of bringing the implications of this body of knowledge to greater public awareness. Mark launched his own website in 2008 at www.whatonearthishappening.com. In 2010, Mark began hosting his own weekly internet radio show, also called What on Earth is Happening, which continues today in the form of a podcast on Mark's website. Mark is also one of the co-hosts of Free Your Mind, the Philadelphia-based conference on consciousness, mind control, and the occult. Over the years, Mark has worked closely with activist groups in his area, such as the Tesla Science Foundation, Truth, Freedom, Prosperity, and Survive and Thrive Philadelphia. Mark's latest endeavor is teaching an intensive seminar called Natural Law, the Real Law of Attraction, and How to Apply It in Your Life. Visit Mark's websites at whatonearthishappening.com and freeyourmind.com. And Mark's entire presentation, the seven-hour one, including this interview, will be up on the post for this episode, up on the Gnostic Media website, and that is New Age Bullshit and the Suppression of the Sacred Masculine. And donations. This episode is brought to you by Aaron, Evo, and Thomas. Thank you so much to the three of you for making this episode happen. And of course, we do our best to provide just about everything here for free, so your donations and website purchases are greatly appreciated, and not to mention essential to keep the media coming out. The show is run on donations and our website sales. This is not corporate media, but independent media in the truest sense of the words. And we've got new Gnostic Media stickers, bumper stickers that should be coming in anytime this week, I suppose, hopefully. And that'll go along with the bookmarks and other stuff. But the new bumper stickers are going to say Wheat Blows. And so grab some of those and help to continue what we do here. Also, you can order a DVD, the She Who Remembers Audio Archives, T-shirts, or you can get a membership to download the older shows or get a disc with the first 4 years of the Gnostic Media Podcast. And with your help, you continue this unprogramming. The views expressed by the authors and guests of this unprogram are their own and are not necessarily those held by myself, the host, or Gnostic Media. You can check out the website at www.gnosticmedia.com. That's G-N-O-S-T-I-C media.com. You can contact me directly on the contact form on the website or at contact@gnosticmedia.com. Thanks for listening and thank you for your support. And here is my interview with Mark Passio, Balancing the Sacred Feminine and Masculine and Exposing New Age Bullshit. Enjoy.
Reactions online. A lot of people have emailed me and told me that it's exactly what they needed to hear, and they had fallen into that camp for years, and were appreciative that somebody put something like that together. So
yeah, well, back in what was it, 2009 or 2010, I interviewed Dr. Barbara Ehrenreich regarding her book Bright Sided, and all of the positive thinking stuff, and we went into The Secret and all of this stuff. And I should mention to people, because I started my audio recording a couple seconds late there, but I should mention to people, oh, and there's the video recording just starting, that you know, we were talking about your new video and how, you know, a lot of the things that you laid out there, I had also been trying to explain for years, but you really got it laid out and just really drive it repeatedly into their head so that, I mean, they really get it. You don't just make the point once. You,
right.
You come at it from like 10 different angles on each slide that you bring up. And, you know, but what I find really interesting, though, is because of you exposing this, people are now out there attacking you for it as well.
Really? I haven't seen much of that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I, you know, when I reposted your video just yesterday, immediately I got three sofas trying to drive attention away from the video.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. And
the reaction on my end that I've seen so far has been overwhelmingly positive.
Sure.
Well, I'd like to even see some of the critiques of it.
You know, it's just the same old stuff every time once you start figuring out how they run the operations, you know, and I mentioned to you earlier today that we had this last week exposed Terrence McKenna as either CIA or FBI from a talk where he admits that he was a deep background and PR agent, and that they had moved him from deep background to PR, and he had been in PR for 15 years, PR, public relations, or propaganda, folks. And what's interesting about the exposure of this is, you know, all of these people are trying to argue that McKenna was using metaphor, that it was just a figure of speech and all of this stuff. He doesn't say that it's a metaphor. He could have used any metaphor. But, you know, what's interesting is, like, when you read his books like True Hallucinations and you go through it, there's this FBI and Interpol chase that he was involved in that no conclusion is ever mentioned. And then when you get to this audio recording that we exposed last week, he brings up his chase by the FBI and Interpol, and he says, then they offered me a job, and I was in deep background, and then for the last 15 years I've been in public relations or propaganda. And right. So, but what's interesting is in the article when I published it, I said this was going to cause a lot of people cognitive dissonance, etc. And they, you know, immediately attack me, say, oh, you know, he's using metaphors. So what's the irony here is that they are actually the ones who are trying to argue that McKenna was lying in order to avoid facing his own admission that he was an agent.
Right. I'll chime in on this topic. I mean, my take on all of this is, yeah, he actually did admit that he had involvement with some government agencies in his background. I don't think he wanted to stress that because I thought he would. He felt that that would lead people not to listen to his message at all. I wrestled with this same kind of thing when I started going public with my information because of my background. And the decision that I had to make was I going to come out and openly tell people that I had been a Satanist for many years and was involved with satanic organizations and dark occult orders? And would that take away from the credibility of what I was saying,
sure,
or would it add to it?
Well,
I
sure
decided
that,
to just be honest right up front and tell people that I was involved from the very beginning, and that was the reason that I was exposing it, because these people were in control. My take on this is, yes, he did admit that he was involved in these agencies. I think that upon his own personal awakening at some point after he had been involved with them for many years, he did try to distance himself from it, but then he tried to keep that somewhat quiet and didn't really want to come out with it to many people. That's my take.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I disagree with you, because, you know, I'm actually the one where, you know, in 2001 to 2004, well, in 2001, 2002, I inherited the She Who Remembers audio archives. And in there were 70 hours worth of Terrence McKenna audio, which was the first stuff that we put out on the internet. And I was studying all of that stuff back then as we were putting it out. But I started noticing a lot of problems in McKenna's work when I was writing my first book back in 2004, 2005, Astrotheology and Shamanism. Just a lot of inconsistencies in the work. Dr. Brian Akers has shown that his whole stoned ape theory was completely fraudulent, that he made up fraudulent citations to Roland A. Fisher, etc., regarding that stuff. But when we get into his background, we see that his largest influences are guys like Marshall McLuhan, who wrote his PhD thesis on the classical trivium, which is using the trivium for mind control rather than freeing right. people. And then we get into, you know, and I've mapped out his whole background, but or not his whole background, but I've mapped out much of his background. And, you know, he's tied into the Esalen Institute, which we've pinpointed as a center of MKUltra. He's also involved in selling cybernetics, which Kybernetes is government control, or from the ancient Greek. One of his largest influences is also Aldous Huxley, who we've got just about nailed down now from his own works, that he was one of the directors or one of the top guys of MKUltra. He was also influenced by Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, who is a Jesuit priest who came up with the Omega Point theory. And then the 2012 theory that he later promoted was actually developed by CIA agent Professor Emeritus Michael Coe from Yale. And so, you know, he, once we get that, you know, that, oh, and he's also selling transhumanism. He was at the Tusman Experimental College, some other stuff going out there, going on there. But when we understand that it was Julian Huxley working with the British Eugenics Society who created these ideas of transhumanism and humanism, and also Terence McKenna was selling feminism, which we've done much to expose with, you know, Karen of Girl Writes What. She's done extensive work to expose how the whole feminist movement was, again, to destroy this sacred masculine, to get people off balance, to focus on the wrong issue, and instead of rather, you know, instead of being effective. And essentially the focus there is to destroy the family unit, because if you can destroy the family unit, there's nothing for people to fall back on as, you know, society collapses, et cetera.
Yeah, I think he definitely fell for a lot of, you know, poisonous ideas at some point, like the transhumanism part and a lot of New Age stuff. That's why I think it's so important for people to have active filters when they take information in and not accept everything that anyone says. I've often said I don't agree with, even amongst people who I consider mentors for my own awakening, I don't take every single thing that they say and just accept it. You have to look at each claim that they make and then run it through a filtration system and see if it comes out the other end as holding true. So I think that's really one of the important parts of information, of truth discovery. And that's what really the trivium is a process of truth discovery. Again, you know, certain things, if you take them wholesale, can lead to a state of imbalance, as you said. And part of that whole New Age agenda is to create an imbalance toward the feminine side of the individual, whereas the masculine side kind of dies away and the person won't stand up for their rights. It's very important to maintain that balance at all times and never to go into one form of imbalance or another, either becoming like a dominator who's bent on control or becoming someone who will just, accept everything and just let their rights be tread upon.
Sure. You know, and I'll just make a point here on that I don't really think that he fell into it or fell for it. I think that he was one of the key progenitors of these ideas, and I think that he fully well knew what he was doing. And when you get into his books like Invisible Landscape, etc., it's really an attack on thought, and it's the whole book is all about selling this mystical stuff that your recent video, 7-hour video, exposes. You know, thinking positively, there are no conspiracies, we should never look at over there, you know, we need to look over here on the positive and, you know, pillow sit and just meditate and make change. And he even says that, you know, that, you know, those who think that conspiracies exist are creating like a cartoon of reality or something like that. You know,
he
never mind.
Was very much against the whole conspiratorial worldview.
Well, but
conspiracy theory is a kind of epistemological cartoon about reality. I mean, isn't it so simple to believe that things are run by the Greys and that all we have to do is trade sufficient fetal tissue to them and we can solve our technological problems? Or isn't it comforting to believe that the Jews are behind everything, or the Communist Party, or the Catholic Church, or the Masons? Well, these are epistemological cartoons. It's, you know, kindergarten stuff in the art of amateur historiography. I believe that the truth of the matter is far more terrifying, that the real truth that dare not speak itself is that no one is in control. Absolutely no one You know, you don't understand Monica, you don't understand Netanyahu. It's because nobody is in control. This stuff is ruled by the equations of dynamics and chaos. Now, there may be entities seeking control, the World Bank, the Communist Party, the rich, the somebody others, but to seek control is to take enormous aggravation upon yourself. Because this process that is underway will take the control freak by the short and curly and throw them against the wall.
Only when I reached La Chorrera in 1971, I had a price on my head by the FBI. I was running out of money. I was at the end of my rope. And then they recruited me. And said, you know, with a mouth like yours, there's a place for you in our organization. And, you know, I've worked in deep background positions about which the less said, the better. And then, you know, about 15 years ago, they shifted me into public relations. And I've been there to the present.
But what the issue here is, just being against something is, again, selling that ignorance. We're not going to go by what the citations and facts say. We're going to make up our mind, we're going to stick to that, and we're going to sell that, and then we're going to attack anyone who brings up those ideas.
You know,
and so same thing.
I see this so much in the New Age community. Whenever I engage people that are actively involved in New Age thought, you repeatedly, and it's one of the themes that I stressed highly in the 7-hour podcast that I made, you see the theme over and over again of de-emphasis on knowledge, on actual knowledge, which again is, of course, the first part of the trivium process. I actually kind of encountered this resistance very recently, and I see these two forms of resistance always taking place. You have amongst the very right-brained individuals, those who are of the New Age bent, let's say, they always want to take the emphasis off of knowledge. And they don't want, they almost have a problem with the word. It's like it's a dirty word. You know, and when you go into understanding how truth is actually discovered, you realize that without these basic building blocks to aggregate all of these individual and seemingly diverse pieces of information, you can't make any progress because you're not even assembling anything for processing. You're not actually doing the input of the raw data that you could even then get to a stage of
garbage in, garbage out.
Exactly. If you just accept anything, you know, and then you don't filter it, then you don't process it, the outcome is always going to be bad on the screen of life, so to speak, if we look at this in a computer metaphor. The other form of imbalance that I always come across is the very left brain form of imbalance of unimaginably rigid skepticism, but moreover than that, even beyond that, and healthy skepticism, there's no problem with. People should have healthy skepticism and question things that they are told and then run it through that filtration system to see if it washes out and holds true. But in the left brain form of imbalance, I always come across people that insist that there is absolutely no such thing as natural law and no such thing as the governing dynamics in creation that actually govern the consequences of behavior. They think that human beings just act without any consequence to their behavioral decision-making processes, and that isn't true as well. So you see both kinds of imbalance.
Sure. And I should point out that you know, we can also find extreme left-minded people who do expose this very irrationality and you know, this unethical stuff, because in fact, when you get into it, the violation of anyone else and their rights is an immediate violation of your own. And
that's
this
right.
is just a simple fact of logic when you sit down and look at it. You know, these people who want to control and manipulate others for their own gains, they're acting irrationally. They're always using deception. They're distorting reality. They have to act in secrecy and hide in all of this stuff, which means that they can never be forthright, and they're not acting in righteousness. They're speaking in forked tongue.
Yeah, and again, the whole idea that knowledge has to basically become this dirty word. They think that it's only about the emotions. They think that it's right. only about feeling good or empathy toward others. And don't get me wrong, that's a gigantic part of the awakening process that has to be integrated into the individual. That's that sacred feminine side of consciousness coming online. But you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater and throw the left brain side away. It has to be a holistic marriage. Sure. And there are things that need to be known and understood, knowledge, understanding, and that leads to correct action in the world, which is wisdom. That leads to choosing the right over the wrong in our daily decision-making processes regarding behavior. And, again, the New Age community wants to say that knowledge is not really a necessary part of that equation in many cases. I'm not making a blanket statement here, but a generalization. And, you know, it goes to the concept that I talked about in the presentation, New Age Bullshit and the Suppression of the Sacred Masculine. The idea of the lost word in ancient esoteric traditions, particularly esoteric Freemasonry, the lost word was the concept of saying no. When your rights are being usurped or tread upon, you always maintain the right to use defensive force against that usurpation of your natural rights. And that's saying no, but without the knowledge, no, K-N-O-W, there first, without that acting as the foundation, one will never get to the point where they will actually say that lost word of no. It's very interesting how they're the same word phonetically, no, N-O, and no, K-N-O-W.
I had a interesting phone or Skype conversation the other day with this woman and her boyfriend. The woman called herself Jessica Mystic. And she was from living in Indonesia, and they called me. They were wanting to come on my podcast, and it was clear that they had never studied any of my work. They hadn't looked at the Trivium or anything, and this goes right hand in hand with your point one of your slide presentation. And she wanted to tell me that conspiracy and New Age were together, and that if you were exposing anything, you know, and she just used a label conspiracy. It didn't matter the facts, the citations, anything right. behind it. She just had a psychological label. And if you're promoting conspiracy, you're promoting the New Age. And, you're causing this by putting the information out there to make people aware that it's going on. And then wow. her boyfriend tried to use the example. You know, for instance, I don't go up to people and tell them about the jungle because they might be scared and then they would be afraid of the jungle. And I said, well, you know, the snakes, he said the snakes, the spider, blah, 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 all of this kind of stuff. And I said, well, you know, what if we, you know, inquired about all of these things, then we could learn about the snakes and the spiders, the specific ones that live in the jungle, which ones we can use for food, which ones we can use for medicine, for healing, for poisons, for our darts, etc. And then he's like backtrack, that was a bad metaphor. It's always a bad metaphor to act in ignorance. And that's right. Jessica Mystic and her boyfriend, is so funny, and she's attacking me, and it's like not even familiar with my work and what it is in the first place, not at all familiar with the Trivium and what it is in the first place.
Right.
They just have this asinine idea based on their own egos and ignorance that if you know the truth about something, it's going to cause more of the mind control yep. out there, when it is, yep. in fact, the ignorance of right. it that promotes the mind control.
That's exactly right. And that's the first deception that I talked about in the New Age presentation that I did, that people think that if you talk about the negative, it brings it on. And that's not what the law of attraction is. That's not how it works. Ignorance is going to bring on more negativity, just as you've said. If we don't actually take in the available information that we have at our disposal and then process it to make accurate decision making, our behavior is always going to be in a state of imbalance. This whole concept of if you talk about something that's negative, that it's going to bring about more negative, it's sheer nonsense, because the best way of preventing something that is negative is to be informed about the ways that it can harm you or the active processes that are going on that are harmful, and then to protect, to take protective measures against those things so that you can come out ahead of them. It's sure. preparation in conjunction with knowledge. And again, these are like dirty words to people who are in a right brain form of imbalance and are against taking action. They Absolutely. Think that it's all only about emotion. Emotion, once again, is key. I can't stress that enough. I don't want to take any of the emphasis off of that sacred feminine component. It should be present at all times. But without that anchoring point of knowledge, those emotions are going to rule the being instead of actually lead the being as a guide. And they're sure. going to prevent them from understanding what they need to know through fear of to actually get out of the control situation that we're currently in. Now, Jan, you mentioned something that really paralleled with something that just happened to me very recently. And I won't get into the details or mention the person's name, but someone who just – I was talking about the Trivium in a not a lecture. It was just like a mini presentation that I did as part of another event recently, locally here in Philadelphia. And someone who had never studied the Trivium said that they think there's no value in understanding that or studying it without actually looking into it first for themselves. I said, well, what do you know about the Trivium? How much have you studied it? And they said, not really much at all. I just heard about Marshall McLuhan's negative usage of it. And I Right. said, well, how could you judge every single thing about a topic based on what one person did with it in a misguided way and in a lack of in a way that emphasized his lack of understanding of it, and then judge the entire topic based on that one criterion?
And we should make it clear for the audience that there are two forms of the Trivium. There is the classical Trivium, which is used to encircle or encapsulate the mind, as Kevin Cole made clear on Richard Gross' Tragedy and Hope show. And then there is the Trivium method, which is actually the antithesis of how they use it for control. Now, on your point that you just mentioned about negativity, you know, this is something that comes up constantly. You know, we can't look at this, you know, it's too negative, you're negative, you're being negative, all of this kind of stuff, dismissing information. And in logic, this is known as killing the messenger, or, you know, a fallacy of the ad hominem attack, etc.
Right.
But I also need to point out that how do you, and an ad hominem attack is like, you're wrong because, you know, you name call it the person, you're negative, you're this, you're that, you're an asshole, you're a prick, you're whatever. They just use a name to dismiss mm-hmm. the information, and then they go off thinking that they're, you know, righteous and mighty because they just prove their own ignorance. But how do you know what's negative before you've looked at it? And if
right.
information that is supposedly negative and you study it and it saves your life, then isn't it positive? You know, let's say there's an army on the other side of a hill, you know, and I often use this example, or there's a village on one side of a hill and you live in a village on another side of a hill, right? And then you have the village idiot, okay? And the village idiot, he's up on top of the hill and he's like the boy who cried wolf, you know? And he's always screaming and ranting and doing nonsense and stuff. And one day he comes running down the hill and he's like, you know, the enemy's coming, they're coming to kill us, blah, blah. You know, he's using all of this appeal to fear, and he's calling them enemies, so that's an ad hominem. And so, you know, you have two choices. Oh, here's the crazy, you know, fool on the hill coming, you know, doing his typical boy cried wolf thing. Or you could say, okay, you know, I'm going to recognize the fallacy right there, which is recognizing that just because someone uses fallacies doesn't necessarily mean it's untrue. And then so you go and you stick your head up over the top of the hill and you look and you go, holy shit, there's an army coming, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, this actually protects you and it saves you by
right.
gaining firsthand knowledge, as you were discussing.
Right. Discussing. Gnosis.
Right. Because we have to have the who, what, where, and when before we can process any logic of why, oh, that guy's an idiot, he's doing it again, versus, oh, crap, there is actually someone coming down the hill to look
That's
at
right.
us. And people have a really hard time asking, and they've been conditioned to do so through the compulsory education system, but asking those questions, who, what, where, and when, before they try and determine why, and even more, right. before they send their mental viruses on down to others.
Right. You know, it just emphasizes the concept that there is no such thing as knowledge that is negative. There is only knowledge that is based upon available information and what one does with it.
Right.
And that's the key thing that I think needs to be stressed. Anybody that thinks knowledge is either positive or negative in and of itself aren't really correct. Again, it's only the information that is available to us that constitutes potential knowledge that may be gathered, that may be processed, and that may be understood and then acted upon by individuals, and what they do with it, how they actually put that knowledge into practice.
Indeed. Now, I want to talk on something else because, obviously the trivium leads directly into the quadrivium. When we get into the quadrivium, we get into the golden ratio, the Fibonacci. Walk outside, look at a pine cone or a sunflower or an animal, bird, whatever, and you just go, wow, wow, that's pretty amazing. Now, I don't find any of that in any of the mystical literature, any of that stuff out there. And in fact, in my opinion, just even trying to put what is realized out there in the world around us through the trivium is on its own. And to try to put it into words would corrupt it and turn it into one of these cults. Now, interestingly, we have, the words that describe the occult are mystic, which, if you look that up, actually means to mystify or to befuddle. And that comes from the ancient Greek Eleusinian Mysteries, which we've we exposed recently. My co-author Joe Atwell and I, we exposed recently, was actually a government-operated psychedelic mind control system where you had two families that controlled the whole thing. And if you told anybody anything about the secrets, you could be punished by death. So, it came with capital punishment if you told anything. Here's this state-controlled religion that they're using to control the masses through this experience. And so when we get into the word occult, the same thing. The word occult means to hide, hidden, etc. The word esoteric, the same thing. What's esoteric? It's hidden. What's exoteric? It's out in the front to the people. Now, interestingly, we have words like sacred. Sacred is ironically tied closely to words like secret and secretary. The secretary kept the secrets for the boss man, who is the one at the top of the ladder or the pyramid. And so all of these words, mystic, occult, esoteric, sacred, they all relay these themes of control from up above and getting people to believe in it in a mystical, spiritual sort of way to trick and fool them. Now, again, I am not trying to confuse this with what the quadrivium reveals as far as the indescribability of nature and looking at the Fibonacci, etc., the golden ratio in a pine cone or whatever it may be. So the quadrivium goes up from there as well. So I just wanted to make that point and get your feedback on that.
Yeah, and this is actually something that I've been preparing to actually do a presentation, a simple presentation. I like to engage people in person too, so I like to set up some presentations, in person here in Philadelphia that I actually encounter people live. And I want to do a simple presentation on the nature of occult knowledge and what it actually contains. Because, again, it is very mystified for people, suggesting mystery, suggesting secrecy. And it is. There is no question about that. You're absolutely correct about that. It has been held very tightly to the chest and secreted away by individuals who want to use this knowledge as a mechanism of controlling other people. That's why they want to keep it secret. That's why it's, to them, it is their sacred knowledge, because they want only them to have it and to keep it back from other people, because if people were to look into this in this body of information, they might become unfit for slavery. And that's the last thing elites want. So the question then becomes, what does occultism actually contain so far as knowledge goes? What type of knowledge
And let's point this out too real quick, Mark, because what do? They actually will use the terms like occult and mystical and things like, hey, don't look there. That's evil. Right. That's bad. Devil worship or whatever. But the issue is, and in fact, those statements are for the most part true. But the issue is if you don't study them, you're totally vulnerable being attacked and being manipulated by them. So, you know, if we level the playing field and if everybody studies this stuff, then no one can use it against anyone.
Correct.
And so, you know, and I think that's a go ahead.
Yeah. And the point I was going to make is, you know, the information that this body of knowledge contains has to do with how human beings can be manipulated, like through words, like through the definition or the obfuscation of the definitions of words, like a cult. So just as you said, they manipulate people into thinking that it's bad. So what does that do psychologically in the mind of the average human being? The information doesn't even need to be kept hidden at that point anymore. If you can get them to think of this whole body of information, this whole body of knowledge as something that's evil or bad and that should not be looked into, you are manipulating them. You are dissuading them from ever looking into that information and therefore never coming out of the mind control methodologies that have been used against them. Now, again, this goes back to if human beings are manipulable, okay, and if occultism is the main methodology by which people are being manipulated, and I think we both agree that's true.
Yes, and the trivium.
The negative usage of the trivium, the negative application, okay? Now, then the question becomes for people to understand what information, what is the nature or the type of information that occultism actually contains. And it can be very easily summed up in a nutshell without going into, you know, extreme levels of detail in the specifics. As a generality, there are two main bodies of information that occultism is comprised of. And that is knowledge of the self. In other words, knowledge of the human psyche and how the human psyche actually operates and a human being's general nature and a human being's general motivations. If that can be understood, and that is the first body of knowledge that occultism comprises, that is the world of the microcosmic knowledge, what has been generally called in occult circles the minor arcana or arcana. However you want to pronounce that word, meaning the lesser knowledge or the knowledge of the small, you could say. It isn't that it's lesser or greater in terms of importance. It is the knowledge of the microcosm or the world of the small thing, okay? The individual, the individuated unit of consciousness that has been called the monad in different occult schools of thought, the one thing or the individual. Then the second body of knowledge that occultism comprises is the knowledge of the world of the very large, the macrocosmic world. This knowledge is about the laws of nature, of the laws of the universe that are operating all around us, which we are a part of and which we are within and we are bound by. So if you can do those two things simultaneously, you can dissuade people or hide away the knowledge about how oneself works, while simultaneously dissuade people from looking into or hide away knowledge about how the seemingly external world or the universe works. You have somebody 100% totally under control.
Sure.
Especially if you deeply understand that knowledge and they're in a place of ignorance and there's your power gap.
Exactly.
There's your power difference.
Now, interestingly, on this same line of thought here and, you know, dismissing information before we study it, this is going to be, you know, and bringing up this name always causes outrage in people who have never studied the work. And interestingly, she had done a lot to expose the likes of B.F. Skinner, who worked at Esalen selling these mind control systems, etc. But, you know, Ayn Rand and the Ayn Rand Institute, they had done a lot trying to expose a lot of the mysticism and stuff like that. And, you know, for many, many years, I had the same knee-jerk reaction that many people have where, you know, Ayn Rand, bad, you know, left-brained, objectivist, they're idiots. You know, we have to focus all on the right-sided, positive thinking, pillow-sitting mentality. But, you know, her partner, and Leonard Peikoff, I'll admit, he's got some of the worst politics out there, but he's got some of the best logic stuff, which is irony, and his history of philosophy is excellent also. And so, you know, rather than poisoning the well and say, because, you know, Peikoff or Ayn Rand made one mistake here, that we have to dismiss everything that they ever said in their entire lives, if we go through their work and we start looking at it, I think it was in the last chapter of Peikoff's audio lecture series, The History of Philosophy, he talks in there about mysticism always being the tool of tyrants. Mysticism and religion always being the tool of tyrants. And, you know, what it seems is that these people use these tools against those who don't know it, and they get, you know, the people into these spiritual situations like, you know, like the Zionists and Bolshevism or the Nazis and, you know, Hitler and all of this kind of stuff. And it's the same religious sort of mystical appeal that they use behind it each and every time to sell it. So, you know, and here we see this huge pumping up of the New Age. And, you know, and Terence McKenna admits in his book, The Archaic Revival, I think it was, that he renamed the New Age the Archaic Revival, you know, so because it fit more with the historical patterns, he explained. But it's actually that what they want to do is they want to bring about a new Dark Age or a postmodernism, neo-feudalism, archaic revival, as McKenna sold it.
Yeah, you know, to go back to Rand, I really like a lot of her work, but again, you know, some of it does go into some left brain extremism, but in general, you know, her idea about the rights of the individual and, you know, property are
absolutely
very, very accurate.
Absolutely.
And again, you can't throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Exactly.
There's so much great information there. I do, however, feel that she leaned too much toward the side of pure selfishness.
Altruism
in general was a bad thing overall. But, you know, I think we have to maintain compassion and empathy for our fellow human beings. And if we are in a position to help them, I don't see anything wrong with that, as she somewhat put forward that was almost completely wrong to do. There's nothing wrong with rendering assistance to our fellow human beings, especially if, you know, we are in a position to help them. Not saying do everything for them, do their work for them. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, I think she felt a little bit more toward, you know, the extreme left brain side of that form of imbalance. And that was capitalized on and seized upon by many satanic, you know, schools of thought as well. And they used that to pave
We researched the whole thing, but, you know, the tie between Alan Greenspan and her, you know, and how they blame her for what Alan Greenspan did. He actually, when you get in and you read what she said, he actually did the antithesis of it, and then she gets the whole blame for it.
Because he's using government as the backing for all of it, the violence of government.
Exactly, exactly. And not only that, but, you know, the biggest problem that I found in studying Ayn Rand was that she very often puts her logic before her grammar. And so it doesn't mean that the logic is flawed. It means that she didn't pull in enough information to make those conclusions. So let me just make this point, though. When you understand that she put her logic before her grammar, you can go through her work and put it back and pull out a whole lot of valuable information.
Sure. And to stress your point, you know, she also often dismissed the whole conspiratorial worldview of history as well, and didn't think that there were powerful elites that were in control of all of these.
Meanwhile,
systems
she was being funded by the Rockefellers, right?
Well, I don't. Who knows?
It's possible. But, yeah, I think it is true, or she was dating one of them or something. But yeah, we should probably look into that before we throw out false grammar.
Right. Huh? Right. But to go to your second point regarding the controllers always using religion and mysticism. Absolutely. That is how they basically get people to act as a herd, by all conforming to the same beliefs. It's always based upon belief instead of knowledge. And again, if people took in the available information, then processed it and understood what was true in that available information and what was not true, and come to a level of understanding, that second part of the trivium process, they couldn't be manipulated by that tactic of using belief to create herd mentality and collectivism.
Now let's get into transcendence, okay? This is a really good, fun word that I want to get into, because I've been doing a whole lot of research on Aldous Huxley's background. Like, for instance, this book shows that he was related to many, many, many of the top people in MKUltra, and he's actually telling them what studies they should be doing, et cetera. And then you look in other MKUltra reports, and you can actually see the studies that Huxley was recommending being done. Now, in Huxley's Moksha and elsewhere, he talks about this term transcendence and what it really means. Now, to people like him, who are these sociopathic manipulative controllers from the, you know, from the Fabian Society, who put on the wolf in sheep's clothing and then pretend that they're warning you about the situation while they never actually tell you any valuable information that you can use to go discover who's actually doing it. And then when you look, you're like, oh, well, it's him and his brother and their pals who are doing it, you know. So it's, you know, and these tricks are always used by the Fabians and, you know, people out of the Century Club or Century Association out of New York, which is the East Coast sister club of the Bohemian Club. And, you know, so he's hanging out there at the Century Association with guys like Alan Dulles, Gordon Wass, and, you know, Walter Lippmann, all of these, you know, well-known people regarding MKUltra, mind control, manipulation, sophism, propaganda, etc. And so then we realize, oh, he is this guy, and he's tied into the entire upper echelon of this power structure. But when we read his book, Moksha, it's clear there that his idea of transcendence and getting up to the next level is actually, well, what they want to do, and let me just read this quote here, what they want to do is get people into loving their servitude, and it's done through drugging them. So what he is actually saying, and he admits it in his book, Moksha, is that the word transcendence is actually about getting people high enough and screwed up in the head enough to where their servitude and their physical situation no longer bothers them, and then they're actually happy about their servitude. So now, let me just read you this here. He says, by now, psychoanalysis is being combined with hypnosis, and hypnosis is being made easy and indefinitely extensible through the use of barbiturates, which induce a hypnoid and suggestible state in even the most recalcitrant subjects. Within the next generation, I believe that the world's rulers will discover that infant conditioning and narco-hypnosis are more efficient as instruments of government than clubs and prisons, and that the lust for power can be just as easily satisfied by suggesting people into loving their servitude as by flogging and kicking them into obedience. So then when we understand that his word through via Moksha, his word transcendence and using psychedelic drugs to transcend all of this is really just getting people caught into this positive thinking, off-balance state where they don't think critically. They literally kill the messenger anytime. I mean, not literally. The term killing the messenger, if the person had an opportunity in physical reality, they would likely kill that person because the information makes them uncomfortable. And so this is why we have the term killing the messenger, and it's also from the ancient, you know, Roman wars and stuff, when the man on the front lines would run up, and if the sergeant or whatever didn't like what he said or something, they would sometimes kill him, so they would kill the messenger. So anyway, that is what transcendence is really about, getting you to love your servitude and getting you to ignore and think positive about all of the negative stuff and pretend that it's actually not happening.
Right. And I think in the modern day, they don't even have to put a drug out there into society to get people to fall into this trap. They're doing it with the improper usages or the abuse of things like meditation and yoga in the New Age circles. These are actually being used as the modern day soma, the modern day drugging of the mind, because of the endorphins, the endogenous morphines that a lot of these practices will induce in the human physiology. And the reason they're doing pushing people into this improper usage of meditation and yoga is as forms of escapism from the slavery that they're undergoing, to make it easier for people to just accept the current conditions of the world as their lot in life. And as Huxley stated there, to accept their slavery readily without a struggle.
Now, I want to point out that we do have today all of the drugs in the water and everything, and I covered this topic with Duncan Curtis, or Curtis Duncan, I think it's Duncan Curtis. Anyway, for those who want to check that out and what they've done to the water supply and all the drugs in there, but this is actually something that Aldous Huxley actually wanted and promoted, not necessarily directly in the water, But in Moksha, he talks about how he wants a drug for every emotion, and that the drugs themselves are going to somehow evolve us just by taking a pill. Never mind any actual knowledge or anything that we build up by gathering data. We're just going to take a pill, and that's going to evolve us. And that was his whole idea. But, you know, selling this whole dumbing down. So when we look at all of the drugs in the water and everything today, and this whole situation, we can actually see that these are things that originated from Aldous Huxley. Now, you know, now we don't necessarily need the psychedelic 60s and whatnot for that idea, but that is in large part what kicked it off, and Huxley and all of those guys were behind that. Huxley and Humphrey Osmond actually hired Timothy Leary to go out and promote that.
You know, I think the whole idea here is to try to get people to buy into the idea that no real work needs to be done upon the self, but even moreover than that, no real knowledge needs to be taken in. Again, it goes
back to
the
idea. And no real action. Don't forget the action, right?
Woo. Of course, no action. You take no action.
And get this. So whenever, you know, like during the 60s up in San Francisco, whenever there was a big protest going on, and Leary had admitted that he was actually an agent, but later on, and we're just about, you know, we're working on a new paper exposing all of that. But so Leary would actually show up anytime anything was starting to be done in a cohesive unit where they were getting organized and getting the direction going on, Leary would show up and start saying, "Hey, everybody, you need to be spiritual. You need to think positive. You need to ignore the politics, and you need to ignore the soldiers left in Vietnam, and you need to turn your backs on them." And this is all in 66 and 67. And then in 69, he turned and ran for governor of California.
Wow.
You know, so we can see he's telling everybody else to just pillow sit and think positive and do nothing and chase the psychedelic rainbow, while he's, you know, manipulating them in this direction. And then he turns and runs for governor of California. I mean, you couldn't get any more, you know, obvious irony anywhere.
You know, and regarding these techniques, one also needs to keep in mind these are just tools. Usage of psychedelics, usage of meditation, usage of yoga. I'm not condemning any of those things and saying that in and of themselves they are inherently bad or evil or wrong to partake
in. It's like a steak knife.
It's a tool. It's how it's used. There's a proper usage done with knowledge and in a correct setting and in a correct context. And then there's an abuse of it. There is something that you can use. It's a tool that can be also used improperly, and harm can result as a result of employing it in an incorrect context. That's very important to keep in mind, and that requires discernment. It requires looking into something before you go and take action based upon it. So you can't take that middle step out. This is how all mind control works. There's the knowledge. Then there's the processing, then there's acting upon it. Stimulus response and going right to action, that's mind control. Taking out that processing or filtration stage,
that's the most important step of mind control. Let me just make a point here on that, because this is really important that people need to understand here. It's the misdirection and getting people to focus on the wrong target. So, you know, if you hear something on the meter, well, that's wrong, and you just go out and you leap and you act on it, that's almost just as bad as not getting any information at all.
Then
any activism that you do could very well and usually is misdirected and focused on the wrong target. It's just like I've interviewed Clint Richardson a number of times regarding the CAFR research and all of this stuff. And he has exposed, you know, that the financial system is essentially run by your local city, county, and state governments who own the stocks and all of the companies. They take our tax money. They invest it in the funds. They don't give us any returns on these investment funds. And so what we have here is, rather than all of these people going to their local city halls and counties, et cetera, and stirring hell with them and all of this stuff that's going on, we see the Occupy movement wrongfully focused over at Wall Street and all of this stuff. So they're an entirely co-opted movement. They didn't get their data and their, you know, their grammar correct before they went out and acted. So they are totally misdirected and co-opted.
Absolutely. I said that from day one with the Occupy movement, that there was a lot of good emotions there with the people. And I'm not saying that they were bad individuals. They were misguided because they lacked a framework of knowledge underneath that action. And that could easily be co-opted and directed and pushed in any direction that someone with that knowledge wants to take them. And, you know, that's what I think those individuals, had they just gotten a little bit more basic knowledge underneath their belt before they went out and acted in the capacity that they did, maybe their efforts would have went a lot farther and would have really created some lasting change, instead of just flickering out and dying out quickly.
Yeah, you know, and what's irony is that there was a guy from Free Your Mind One conference that we had met there. And then a couple of months later, he shows up on YouTube in some video and somebody's asking him about the Trivium. And he's got it all wrong and upside down and backwards. You know, and he's totally misdirected there at the Occupy movement. But he actually got the Trivium, didn't get it, and then was out there actually misrepresenting the Trivium and showing how he had got caught in that whole thing.
You know, it's so misunderstood because people don't really, I don't think they create an accurate metaphor for what this method really is and then go in and study it in detail. I was actually attempting to explain this to a few people last night. And I put up a real simple, I mean, maybe I could even give you the infographic to include with the podcast. I put up a real simple infographic, and I was explaining it for about a half an hour. And it simply contained the general metaphor of how our world is manifested, how our world is built. And if you look at what happens in the world, the truth about what happens in the world and creates our result, our manifested world, the reality that we must live in other words, the quality of the conditions of life, that's built upon something, that's contingent upon something. Something else has to happen for those things to go into manifestation. And of course, that's behavior. Human behavior creates the conditions that we live in as a species, as a society. That behavior is in turn based upon something else. It's based upon the quality of each individual in a given society. It's their decision-making processes that are taking place in mind. Okay? So that's acting as the basis for behavior. Now, if you go one step lower than that, you get to the foundation. You get to what drives the decision-making processes that lead to behavior. And that is available information or potential knowledge. That's the grammar that underlies all of it. And if that is messed with, if that is diluted, or if people are dissuaded from even amassing that grammar, those seemingly disparate pieces of information that are critical to effective decision-making processes, the being is controlled from the get-go.
Absolutely.
So when I was explaining this, some people that were there really got it, got the metaphor well, understood it, asked questions about it. And there were some who were somewhat more right brain imbalanced that had a problem that everything is contingent upon knowledge. They have that concept that knowledge is somehow a bad thing,
sure,
or isn't the answer.
Sure. Well, and
knowledge is the answer.
Sure. And you know, the issue is, and I hear this a lot, is all Western philosophy is wrong and bad. All of it. They just dismiss. And of course, they've never studied any of it, you know, and they say, well, you know, we should only focus on Eastern philosophy. We should totally dismiss all Western philosophy. And, you know, and I've heard it many more times than once. And, you know, but, you know, when we study the Western philosophers going all the way back from Plato, et cetera, we can see how these guys were co-opted often, more often than not, in fact, and using these philosophies to help the elite co-opt the masses.
Sure.
You know, it's like Aristotle was Alexander's mentor, you know, but, you know, all foundation that we have today, you know, and a lot of people, you know, criticize, geez, now I just lost his name. The one I just said. A lot of people criticize Aristotle for having some errors, but he was the one who made the primary foundation that we built upon. And just because, again, he had some errors doesn't mean that we should throw the baby out with the bathwater, and it doesn't mean that he didn't create the foundation for us to be able to go out and discover truth. Right. Now, I'm constantly bombarded by people who are caught up into the idea that there is no truth, that that everything is, you know, and I've come to start calling it the quantum physics insane asylum, because, you know, what they've done is they've coupled the New Age with this quantum physics nonsense. And the reason why I call it nonsense is just before I gave the lecture out at the Free Your Mind One, in fact, on the flight to and from Philadelphia, I was reading David Harriman's book, getting ready for an interview that I did with him right when I got back on his book, The Logical Leap. And he's ironically, again, with the Ayn Rand Institute. But he had done a whole expose, a 6-hour, you know, aside from his book, a 6-hour series that Richard Grove had put out on Tragedy and Hope, or on Peace Revolution podcast, episode number 62. It's a 6-hour lecture that exposes quantum physics as a big sophist fraud, and he traces it all the way through history back to Immanuel Kant and how they were manipulating all of this stuff. And so, you know, once you get that quantum physics, that we don't live in this insane asylum, this Roger Rabbit cartoon type reality that they want to sell us, you know, where right. any, you know, I mean, you walk out of the store. Well, I mean, forget walking out of the store. When you're in the store, it, you know, the cashier can hand you whatever change because it doesn't matter. You're just going to, oh, you know, you can give him $100 and for a $1 item, and he gives you a penny back, and you go, okay, let's be positive. You know, or if they walk out of the store and their car isn't there, they go, you know, my car wasn't stolen. It like elevated to the next level, you know. I mean, it's just this ridiculous Roger Rabbit cartoon reality stuff. But, you know, guys, you know, and we've been researching backgrounds of guys like Amit Goswami, who also ties into, again, the Esalen Institute and being a center of MKUltra and selling all of this Agenda 21 Fourth World stuff. But, you know, Amit Goswami, he's this professor of physics who goes around the world telling kids that they should give up their rights and their freedoms because we can't know anything, because it's all a big group mind think, and that this is the reality that we should go on. You know, and I wanted to ask you at that point, you looked into the quantum physics issue yet?
It can be a dangerous path to go down if it's perverted like that. I'm not saying that there is no truth to some of the science. I'm
sure,
saying that
they're very minimally, though.
it's taken in a context of the whole macro world operates exactly like we see the micro world operate.
Sure, and then they use it as a religion to sell it for this, you know, for the tyrants always using the mystical to take our rights away.
There's no problem with looking at how that extreme microcosmic world operates, because it's very interesting to understand that it's showing us that there really is no as such solidity in nature, that nature is like a construct that exists and has consciousness and mind as a basis for it. That doesn't mean pervert this understanding of what the basis of the unified field level of reality is,
well, you know,
into a religion and make it be about that you can never know anything, which is solipsism, is the path to all totalitarianism.
And he takes a step further, though. He does expose a lot of the science behind it as entirely fraudulent. The studies, you know, things like this. So, you know, I do recommend people check out Rich. You know, it's Richard Grove published the whole thing on the Peace Revolution podcast, episode number 62. And so it's the entire Philosophic Corruption of Physics lecture is up there now. It does really require, which you have, Mark, a prerequisite of at least a little study in the trivium and the logical fallacies so that you can understand some of the concepts that David Harriman is presenting. Because if you haven't studied the logical fallacies, you're going to confuse yourself in your own fallacious thinking and not understand the points that he is expressing there.
Yeah, this concept of solipsism, it really needs to be understood, and it really needs to be intellectually combated, because it's a virus. And this is what many of the so-called New Age teachers are putting out there into the world, that there is, that not only can truth not be known, but that there is actually no such thing, that it doesn't actually exist, that there is no truth about anything that could be known.
If one plus one is not two.
Yeah. If someone will buy that, they'll buy anything. If you could work someone's mind into that level
of stupidity,
denial, It is stupidity, and it's denial. It's denying the real and replacing that with your imaginary version of reality, and you're now the arbiter of truth, and anything can be real or true based on your perceptions. That's called solipsism. It's just this perverted form of quantum mechanics is being sold to people in the New Age circles as a new form of solipsism. It's just solipsism repackaged. Dangerous path.
I think looking at the history of it, and Einstein, of course, was one of the key creators of quantum physics. There was five or six guys. And, Einstein is, he worked with, again, Julian Huxley at the New York Humanist Society, et cetera. He ran that with him. He was selling this same dumbing down agenda that Huxley's brother was selling out of the Esalen Institute. So we have a direct tie in there between Einstein and this agenda. But we also know that Einstein, you know, he was a third-rate mathematician. He stole most of his material from the U.S. Patent Office. And then, you know, his wife was actually the smarter of the two of them. And then he became, the hero of all of this. But there's actually a really good 2,300-page book on Einstein that exposes all of this called The Manufacture and Sale of St. Einstein.
Wow. I have not looked into Einstein's background enough to comment on all of that, but it's material that I would definitely be interested in taking a look at.
Yeah, and there definitely seems to be overlying patterns directly between quantum physics and the Kabbalah, and I've also noticed Zionist tie-ins with its misapplication as well there.
And again, when we talk about concepts like Kabbalah, a lot of people think that all of these occult schools are somehow bad or evil.
Sure, and
again,
you have to study
knowledge.
It.
It's how it's used. You have to understand the general concepts, how the symbology, what it represents, and then understand there's different applications for it. So
sure.
Is there such a thing as dark Kabbalah, or what is known
Absolutely.
As in Kabbalah? It's known as Klipotic Kabbalah, based on the concept of the Klipot. And, this is a dark variant of Kabbalism, whereas there is a very positive expression and a light variant of Kabbalism that does act as a transformative process for thinking and emotion and behavior and alignment with natural law. So you have to understand, all of this knowledge could be taken in two different paths. You can go down the one path that leads to control. If you're using it as you understand it, and this other person doesn't understand it, and I'm going to use it as leverage. That's the dark path. That's dark occultism. And then it can also be used. You can take it out of hiding. You can de-occult it. I like to look at light occultism not even as occultism. I don't even like to look at myself so much as an occultist. I am one who has studied occult knowledge, hidden knowledge. I prefer to look at myself as a de-occultist.
Exactly.
And it's a term that I think we should put out there more and more.
What is it actually? What is the actual word when you de-occult or unoccult something? Do you know?
An apocalypse.
Well, it's actually education.
Education to draw out, to lead
right.
one out
exactly.
from the darkness,
right.
or
right.
to
exactly.
take away the help.
Is that,
to take away
is that
the
irony that the antithesis of the occult is education? So
that's right.
You know, and I think what I was going to mention a minute ago is I think actually your and my last show was on the Kabbalah and how it's misused, wasn't it?
Yes, I believe so. Yep.
So you know, people can go and find Mark Passio interview episode 3, I believe that was, or part 3. And they will get that. It could have been part 2 with you, but I think it was part 3. And then this would be part 4, I believe.
I think so.
So, yeah. And so, should we... I'm sure people are going to be wondering. So, Jan didn't show up at the Free Your Mind 2, but yet he and Mark are sitting here doing a whole talk together. Should we address that, or should we just leave them
not?
In limbo?
No, why not? I'll just give my take.
Okay.
Jan felt that, or expressed to us, he felt that he wasn't going to be compatible with some of the other speakers that were on there, and felt that he should sit out the Free Your Mind 2 conference after having received an invite. And we respected his decision professionally. And I don't hold any hard feelings against people for making a decision like that. If they feel that was in that, if you felt that was in your better interest, and that this conference wasn't a good fit for your work, and you had changed your mind about it, I can still accept that and listen to the person's information, check it, decide whether it's good or not, and work with them in the future, because we're all about the same thing. We're about the discovery of the truth, and we're about building a world that is based on freedom. And that's all the baseline commonalities one really truly needs.
Right.
And we're both all about gathering knowledge in order to do that, and then converting that knowledge into understanding, and then putting it into practice in a positive way in the world that does lead to freedom. So as far as I'm concerned, we have a mutual respect. And if, you know, one decision that you made, you know, went a certain way, I'm not going to hold that against somebody forever or even hold it against them at all. So sure. That's my take on the entire situation. If you want to add to that, you know, feel free.
Well, you know, my only worry was that, it was becoming obvious, and I had checked the backgrounds of a few of the presenters, and we're not talking about all of them for sure. And, you know, certainly you, Larkin Rose, and a number of others were doing very excellent presentations there. And but the issue was, is as I was writing my presentation and going through people's backgrounds, I realized that part of my lecture was going to inadvertently expose two or three, maybe four of the other presenters as a part of this agenda. And I didn't want to put myself in a situation on the other side of the country, you know, where this was going to happen. It just, you know, it would make things uncomfortable. And it's just best to, you know, not try to, you know, cause direct conflict like that.
And we respect your decision for that as part of the Free Your Mind group. And you could even look at what I did at the Free Your Mind 2 conference as almost being controversial and conflict-inducing, possibly.
Sure. Well,
I personally did not get that result. The result that I got was overwhelmingly positive response, to the point where I couldn't believe it. I was expecting to receive a negative reaction to what I was going to get up there and talk about. People received the information I put out tremendously well. And after my presentation, it was just, you know, people wanted to ask questions and learn more about it. And, you know, for me, I couldn't believe that people were so ready to hear what I had to say on that topic. And that's why I decided not to even wait for the videos to be released. And people are really have been asking, when are the videos going to be available? They are coming. Our video editors are doing great work. They're really trying to make a nice artistic presentation this time around. I would say probably less than another month. Okay. But I don't want to hold them to that or pressure them into that. But the videos for Free Your Mind 2 are coming. But I wanted to put out in an extended format the information that I put forward at the Free Your Mind 2 conference. And that was that 7-hour podcast that we were talking about earlier. I highly encourage people to check that out. It is posted on my website in the video section as well now.
All right. So what haven't we covered? We covered point one and maybe a couple of other points from your 7-hour presentation recently. Why don't you get into some of the other topics on that so that we can really drive this home with people? I think we have about 25 minutes left before we should think about wrapping it up.
Sure. One of the things I'd like to talk about is the concept of acceptance in the New Age community, that they put forward the notion that everything must be accepted because somehow it's all good and that there really is nothing that's truly negative. This concept of blind acceptance is a mind control tactic. Discernment comes with understanding what cannot actually be changed by human beings and what can be changed, but moreover, not only what can be changed by human beings, what should be changed by human beings. And the New Age movement has a big problem with this concept of should. Now, should is a form of the verb will, okay? The New Age movement has a concept with the concept of taking willful action. It's all about passivity and acceptance and sitting back and just accepting. Now, don't get me wrong. Acceptance of certain things is important. Acceptance of truth is important. This is what all the occult traditions, the positive occult traditions, have always been about attempting to open up the individual to. the concept of higher consciousness or love-based consciousness was always about the opening of the mind, the opening of the heart, so that it could receive. But this does not mean reception without filtration, without filtering. No, it doesn't mean reception and taking in all the pollutants and the diluted material with it. It means taking it in its pure form through a filtration process. You can look at it as taking a funnel, putting it over a narrow neck bottle, putting a coffee filter into that funnel and pouring some water through the coffee filter and filtering it into the bottle, and then it's receiving. That's the
Do you want all the grains, folks? Do you want all the coffee grinds in your stuff? Do you want to filter? I mean, it's like, it is so easy. I mean, when you filter stuff, you get a pure form of it. When you don't filter it, you know, it's one thing to have an open mind. It's another thing to think critically and balanced and actually filter the information to make sure that what you're getting is valid instead of buying whatever nonsense.
Turn your mind into a reverse osmosis filtration system, okay?
Well,
and you'll be doing
sure.
well.
Well, you know, let me just interject one point here on your point of acceptance. And, you know, of course, they've sold not having children and feminism and all of this stuff to the hippies and New Agers. But for those of you out there who do have children, think of blind acceptance in terms of a murderer or kidnapper and see how that bodes.
Right. Exactly. You know, there's this concept of accept what cannot be changed and change what cannot be should not be accepted. And that brings me back to this term should. I've heard people in the New Age community actually tell me, Mark, whenever you're going to go out there and try to teach people a concept or, you know, something that's going on, never say to them, you should. Someone in the New Age movement actually said this to me, Jan. They said, you should never say you should to anyone. And I said, you just said you should to me right there. It was an internal contradiction right there. They said, you should never say you should, you know. And I never accepted that, because it's like, why shouldn't you say you should or shouldn't to someone else? If you know that something is actually right and you know that maybe what they're doing is wrong, of course you should put that out there for their consideration. And, you know, it's this concept that never, ever, ever create anything that could possibly lead to conflict or to any kind of butting of heads, because that's a bad thing. You know, and this leads to the concept of we'll never call anybody on their bad behavior or their BS in life. We'll just let that go unchallenged, completely unchallenged. And we'll never actually tell them that, hey, this behavior is wrong. This behavior shouldn't be engaged in. You should not be doing this. And I think it's a tremendous disservice to the community. It's one of the points that I think I really wanted to try to make and emphasize in the presentation. And I think most people are coming around to an understanding of this and realizing that when these New Agers never talk about the negative or never put out there, hey, this is wrong behavior and you shouldn't engage in it, I think people are understanding that this is a deception, and it's something to get people to go into total acceptance and download mode and just take things in without a filter and accept it. And again, that's a very dangerous path to go down, because then all kinds of bad ideas that lead to negative situations and negative outcomes can get into your decision-making processes when you don't filter that information and just blindly accept it.
Hear no, see no, say no. Now let me ask you this, Mark. Butting heads. What does that mean when we butt heads? What is the underlying thing going on there?
Well, in the best case scenario, there might be a transfer of information that happens when the heads collide.
Right.
In the worst case scenario, one is totally entrenched in their pre-existing beliefs.
There's not a conversation
happening. There's a confrontation.
Right. Let me word this a different way. So when we see, and let's consider butting heads as a contradiction. Okay. two ideas trying to occupy the same space at the same time, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And obvious
cognitive dissonance.
Right. And obviously one of them is going to be true and one of them is going to be false. Now the quantum physicist person will argue, well, they're both true, you know, and they want you to accept up to 11 or 12 or whatever they have it up to now. Contradictions at the same time and space is, you know, they want you to just accept that blindly. But, you know, when we see a contradiction, this should activate our intuition to say, hey, something's wrong here. There's a lie or an error right here. Right. And so what do we need to do? Ah, we need more grammar. And right. And also the reason why people butt heads is because they refuse to get on the same page. And so, you know, when I posted your 7-hour video and all these people attacking you and everything, none of them had even watched it. It was just all about name calling.
Right.
Right. And so
often they won't talk about the actual information being presented and say what
right.
part of it do you have a problem with and what information
sure.
was actually.
And they
said
won't
that was
ever.
Incorrect.
They will never address specific points. Like when I do my research, publish new articles and things like that. None of the people who ever come and attack me actually address any points in the work. They'll set up a straw man, or they'll just start right out with you're crazy, or you're insane, or you don't get psychedelic drugs, or you never took them, or you know, some other ridiculous nonsense. I mean, you know, for those who have ever listened to any of my shows over the last nearly 5 years, know that I've taken, you know, psychedelics many, many, many hundreds of times. And that, you know, I've come through and I've looked at all of this and looked at all of both sides, look at the facts, look at the information, and find what is true. Yes, truth exists. Yes, 1 + 1 = 2. Yes, when you go to the grocery, you get the correct change. Yes, when you walk outside, if your car is not there, it's either been impounded or it was stolen. It didn't levitate to the Pleiades. You know, right. I mean, we have to use some common sense, or for that matter, Uranus, you know?
Right. You know, and that's the concept, that to try to take concepts from the quantum realm and bring them into the macro realm doesn't necessarily hold true. Yeah, okay, if you want to look at the mathematical constructs of quantum superposition and, you know, the paradoxes that exist at that level, that's fine.
Sure.
to go into those abstract realms.
Sure. However,
but bringing that into the macro world is a dangerous
sure.
Supposition.
Exactly.
Because what you're saying these laws here at this realm operate the same way at this realm. Well, they don't operate at this realm because the aggregate, okay, or the quantum is coming together and forming an actual collapse of the wave function at the macro level, and it's forming what actually occurs here, and that's called truth. Truth exists in this domain. We're not in a quantum microcosmic realm where everything exists in superposition.
Sure, but these premises themselves have to be verified, and the issue
true.
With quantum physics is, you know, you get these guy, I forget his name, but he says, there's this quote floating around out there, this guy, this quantum physics expert says, I don't think anybody in the field of quantum physics understands it. Now, again, going back to my last statement, what does that say? They're not getting on the same page. They're not, you know, see the issue that, well, the issue that David Harriman lays out is that it's all based on fallacious thinking. But when we understand that there are no contradictions in nature, only in the mind of man, right. then what we have is a field of quote unquote science, or, you know, pseudoscience really, who has been debating for 90, 95 years now over the fallacies in their own minds and not what is out in the commons. Because, you know, the reason why we have common sense is because it is something that is out there in the commons that each of us can verify.
Share.
And
that's
so,
right,
you know, here we have, you know, like Amit Goswami using terms like magic, voodoo, can't be verified, the merger of science and religion and all of this stuff, to sell his, you know, Agenda 21 packaging of the quantum physics with the psychedelic new age. And, of course, again, he's out of the Esalen Institute as well.
I think it all goes back to selling solipsism to the public. If solipsism can be bought, okay, if it is sold by the intelligentsia or the elite and the control class, And if it is bought by the public, if they buy the idea that there is no such thing as actual truth that can be verified and can be known, rights go out the window. Human rights go out the window with that buying of solipsism. Because if one does not know through knowledge what the difference between right and wrong is, and hence what their inherent human rights are, they will never say no to any level of oppression that comes down the pike. And that's what selling solipsism to the public is ultimately all about.
You know, it's as the author, Peter McWilliams, who worked with us with the California Hemp Initiative years ago, he was a famous author. He wrote a book called Ain't Nobody's Business If You Do, that he was immediately arrested for and harassed, and he was a medical marijuana patient and died of asphyxiation from vomit, unable to smoke a joint to save his own life. But he made the point that my freedom ends where your nose begins.
Right.
And yeah, it's really that simple, you know.
The idea that do not aggress against your fellow human beings through violence, and at the same time, reserve the right to use defensive use of force if someone is accosting you with violence. It's the sacred feminine principle of non-aggression combined with the sacred masculine principle of self-defense. That's natural law in a nutshell, and it comes down to understanding ownership, to understanding what your rights are, what other beings' rights are. Don't aggress upon those rights and try to usurp them and steal them, because that's someone else's property. Their rights are their property. Their physical possessions are their property, and their life is their property. Don't take any of those things from your fellow beings, and there won't be a problem. And that's what living in harmony with natural law is all about. And that's what comes down to the understanding of the objective knowledge of the difference between right and wrong. And that's what conscience or common sense is. And that's what creates our common shared reality. Either the understanding of that in the aggregate sense of all the individuated consciousnesses that comprise humanity, or the lack of that understanding. They don't have that knowledge, and therefore their output through behavior is going to be inconsistent and it's going to be imbalanced.
You know, I was just thinking, if hippies read Ayn Rand, they could actually get in balance.
It would be an interesting combination of right brain imbalance and somewhat left brain imbalance. Maybe it would end up in the middle somewhere.
You know, obviously the trivium would be a better method, but, you know, the trivium, you know, it's interesting when you get into the logic studies in the trivium. The best logic series out there to date is still Leonard Peikoff's logic series. And then we combine that with this Christian guy, Peter Kreef's book, you know, because Peikoff gets into these lofty explanations where, you know, he's just so smart and you just couldn't possibly understand this stuff. Where, interestingly, this Christian guy who's got this logic book, Peter Kreef, coming from the total opposite side, break some of these concepts down into, it's so simple, it's like this, stupid, you know.
Right.
And so when you put the two together, you get a really good balance in the clarity of the logic. But, you know, it's...
I think that speaks to simplicity of truth. People think truth is this huge mystical concept and it's so impossible to comprehend and take in. Truth
there is no
always
truth.
Truth is always simple. There's a lot to it. I'm not saying that there isn't a large body of information that constitutes the truth, but it's always simple. Truth is elegant. It's simple. It can be readily understood when it is spoken. It doesn't involve enormous complexity that is difficult to follow. It is common sense. That's what we need to regain. That's that lost mode of consciousness that unfortunately humanity seems to have gone astray from and that we need to get back to. And we get back to common sense through knowledge, gnosis, you know, making a diagnosis of the human condition and understanding the knowledge that is needed to heal it. We'll then put ourselves on that path of balance and be on the right track toward healing ourselves, healing our world, and reclaiming our inherent human rights and building a world that's based in freedom.
Now, I should point out that Occam's razor and the shortest path to a conclusion is not always accurate. You know, we do need to make sure that people understand that the truth sometimes can be difficult to find because it's so occulted and occluded. Right. That, you know, it takes effort on our part to go out and dig this information up. Sometimes
sure.
It may take a few minutes or a few hours or a few days, weeks, months, years, but you know, it's it, you know, essentially, if you get down to this point and understand that if you, you know, you can go through your whole life believing in lies, or you can spend a few minutes or a few hours or a few days verifying something and making sure that those beliefs are real and true.
Right. And, you know, a part of what blocks that discovery process is people's own filters, their own attachments to what they want to believe or accept as being true. And again, this goes back to the notion, what do we change because we don't want to accept it? And what do we accept because it actually is true and cannot be changed? That all is a function of how much the person is in ego or not trapped in ego. We can't say that we are the arbiters of truth. Truth exists independently. All we can do is either align our perception to it via an act of our own will and our own research, or we refuse to align our perception to it and therefore are going to be acting in a state of imbalance and creating more self-inflicted suffering for ourselves. So I think that ties back in very nicely to the concept of what can we actually come to change, okay, that does need to be changed, that should be changed because it's not right, it's wrong. And what does need to actually be accepted because it's simply true and
it's the way things are. Let's not forget the courage to change it.
That's right. Courage is then involved in this process. To convert that knowledge into action often takes courage. And again,
it's not pillow sitting, people.
That's right.
It's actually getting up and taking action. And pillow sitting or dreaming is not action. It's the antithesis.
That's right. And so, and remember, true courage is not necessarily the total absence of fear. In many cases, it is taking action in spite of the fear that may be present.
Sure.
You're moving through that fear by an act of will. That's part of the sacred masculine concept, the sacred masculine component of consciousness.
Now, ego, do we need it or do we not need it? Or is that is that an oversimplified, loaded question?
Yes, in a way it is, because ego is not something that needs to be completely destroyed and done away with. It is a tool that is used, but it should not become the master of the individual. We need to master it, master that tool. Ego is the thing that allows us to operate in the physical domain.
So what happens if you kill your ego? Would you like hit your brakes at a stoplight and kill a family, or would you be able to feed yourself, wipe your ass? What would happen?
You would go into an extreme form of right brain imbalance that I think is probably best described or encapsulated by the state of consciousness that someone like Sri Ramana Maharshi entered at some point in his life. This is an Eastern guru or an Eastern teacher that basically started practicing meditation to such an extreme degree that he sat motionless for many, many hours of the day, to a point where he did not take care of his physical bodily needs, became very thin, almost emaciated.
Well, they would say he was enlightened then. That's a good thing. And that's how it would be spun and sold, rather than he wasted his life away sitting on a pillow doing nothing.
See, I don't think that enlightenment constitutes that level of extreme imbalance. I think enlightenment is about balance and then taking action. It's yes, building the right brain up to balance with the left brain, but not going up to the opposite side and creating extreme right brain imbalance. And in no way is left brain imbalance good either. Being so totally overly skeptical and rigid that you don't take in new information, even if it may conflict with what you already think you know. So there needs to be this balance, this marriage, this wedding between these two modalities of consciousness, this left brain masculine form of consciousness and this right brain feminine aspect. When we do that, we won't fall for either of these levels of imbalance, being a controller or being controlled and accepting everything. And I think that that's what would happen, that extreme right brain form of imbalance would happen if we fell into that mode of consciousness. The total death of ego would look like that. It would look as someone who stopped caring about anything and stopped taking any action.
So they would look like a bomb on the street, basically, right?
Not necessarily. I mean, that might be one of physical manifestations of it, but I think they might just look like somebody who just goes along with whatever.
Well,
if
their ego's dead, they would be not taking care of themselves at all, not feeding themselves, not grooming themselves. You know, yes. the lice, the sores, the rest of it probably going along with that.
Yeah.
You know, let's get into the metaphor of Jesus for a little bit. Why don't you go into that?
Well, again, there are two schools of thought on this, some that believe that he was a historical personage and others who believe that it is an allegory about consciousness. I don't really even get into debating that.
I just mean as far as, regarding taking action and anger and all of this stuff.
Oh, sure.
I don't care about the existence or not. We've taken care of that totally.
I personally think that the metaphor suggests a balanced being, suggests a being that understood both the non-aggression principle, the sacred feminine, the higher consciousness of respect the natural rights of all others as you would respect your own self, okay? The concept of the golden rule, do unto others as you would have done unto you, or better yet, the apophatic version of the golden rule stated in the negative sense, which is do not do unto others as you would not wish to be done unto yourself. Much more powerful and more less ambiguous, actually.
Yeah, that goes back to what we were saying earlier. You know, my freedom ends where your nose begins. It's the exact same concept, you know, and it's...
But again, this being was very balanced as well in this metaphor because he took action in his life. He reached out to other people, tried to get them to understand what he knew in his travels and in his studies. And he also did display anger and some could say used force when it was required or necessary when things went into extreme imbalance toward the control side. And I think this is one of the reasons why the system was so against him. He was telling people, you maintain a right to actually physically do something when your rights are being oppressed. You have this whole concept in, I believe it's the book of Matthew, I'm not 100% certain, where he was telling the disciples to prepare to actually buy a travel bag, or what we might call today a bug out bag, and get a sword, buy an actual Roman sword. And people try to interpret this as metaphor or some kind of an allegory. There was no allegory.
Pick up a goddamn sword and go defend yourself, people.
It was get your preparations together and arm yourself with the best weapon available at the time, because these are psychopathic people who are in control. And he was putting forward that concept of the sacred masculine as well. That's why I see the metaphor of the Christ consciousness as very balanced. I don't see it as imbalanced either toward the right brain or the left brain. I see it as a balanced form of consciousness, which is where, which I feel is a good pattern for one's life to really get to that level of balance that we all so desperately need in the world.
Now, interestingly, I forget if it was a Jesus quote in the Bible or, you know, which part of the Bible, but the Bible actually warns people against those who tell you that there is no truth. And I just find that as pure irony, because here's this ancient book that's been around and everybody claims to know it. And right in here is, you know, this book is warning us against people selling occultism and quantum physics and the like, you know.
What about the in the Gospels? I also believe it is in the book of Matthew, where Jesus is quoted as saying, don't think that I've come to bring peace to the earth. I haven't come to bring peace, but a sword. In other words, he, being a vehicle for truth, was acting as something that would create conflict, because it would set people against each other, those who would open themselves up to the reception of truth and those who refuse to go through that truth discovery process and work upon themselves. And he said, I am here to turn family members against themselves, and any family member that isn't willing to take the truth into themselves is not worthy of being one of my disciples or followers, or you know, just people who say that they want to pattern their life after, you know, how I lived mine, which I think is a very powerful set of verses in the scriptures, which is often ignored, and you won't hear that much discussed in modern churches. You won't hear that quote.
Now, here's what Jesus says. Think not that I am to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. And behold, one of them which were with Jesus stretched out his hand and drew his sword and struck the servant of the high priest and smote off his ear. And Jesus said to him, put up again thy sword into his place, for all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword. For all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword.
Right. And what he's talking about there is the non-aggression principle. It's saying aggressing against your fellow human being is always wrong. That's violence. Defensive use of it is something that we reserve as a right. Defensive use of force. It's saying,
well, yes. In Jesus' words, he does say, and he that hath no sword, let him sell his garment and buy one.
If you had to even sell your clothing,
go naked and have a damn sword so that you could protect yourself.
Be able to defend yourself, absolutely. And again, I feel that this is a balanced approach. He's telling people, do not live by the sword. Live by the truth. But maintain the sword to defend yourself when you come under, when you are accosted and come under the usurpation of violence. When your rights are being usurped, you absolutely maintain the right to defend yourself with physical force if necessary. And I find those words a very balanced approach, encapsulating both the sacred feminine principle of non-aggression and the sacred masculine principle of self-defense. I think they're words of wisdom to live by, personally.
Yeah, well, I mean, you obviously can't exist because either one out of balance is, you know, what happens when something out of balance is out of balance. Right. It goes crazy. It goes out of control. Right. And that's what all of this positive thinking pillow sitting, as I call it, causes. And so, you know, of course, this makes it obvious why they coupled it with the quantum physics and all of this stuff, because then they can package it that there is no truth and you might as well not look and you just need to pillow sit and get
accept.
High, get high and transcend your servitude.
It's a disservice that entire community by accepting those notions are doing to their adherents. And, we have to understand action is required. Based on where humanity is at right now, much knowledge is required, much care is required to convert that knowledge into positive action in the world. It's not about just what you know or how you feel. It's about ultimately what you do with what you know, and to create real and lasting change in the physical world. It's not about some hereafter that may or may not ever arrive. It's not about some imaginal realms or some other dimensions of being. It's about being here now, being right here in the now. And what actions are you actually going to take based upon the knowledge that you've taken into yourself? And what are you going to do to make the actual physical surroundings that you live in and others around you live in, the shared reality, a better place to exist?
Wake up.
That's right.
So are there any other pertinent topics that we should cover in this number four with you? Or do you think that's enough for today?
Jan, you know, I think we've really hit upon a great balance here, and we've talked about some things that I think people will definitely garner a lot of value from.
And we'll get lots of hate mail, I guarantee you that.
Sure. Absolutely, and that's fine, too. And people should question everything. You know, don't take our word for it. Go out and do the fact-checking for yourself. Apply the trivia method and see if it bears weight. And if it does, then take it in. If it doesn't, then filter out what needs to be filtered out. We're not perfect beings either, and that should be kept in mind. So, Jan, I want to thank you.
Yeah, and at least have the moral integrity to study something before you go out and attack it or judge
it. That's right, because condemnation without investigation
is the height of ignorance.
That's absolutely right. Jan, I want to thank you so much for providing the opportunity. I just want to let people know my website, whatonearthishappening.com. Tons and tons of hours of audio and video material up on that site. I recommend people go to the podcast section and progress their way through it in a linear fashion, as it is a tapestry of information. I think that's where you'll get your best value out of that website. Once again, whatonearthishappening.com. Jan, thanks so much for having me on your program again today.
And you're so very welcome. And, you and I had been talking about doing an episode together around this subject of mind control for what about maybe 9 months or a year now.
Yep.
So we've finally gotten it out of the way, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come back on and help people lay this out. And let's do this again sometime soon. Maybe, you know, we shouldn't make the audience wait a year and a half for the next one. Or...
Absolutely.
Actually, you know what? We did do an interview together on your show maybe, 6 months ago or so. So it hasn't been that long, but yeah.
Jan, thanks so much and keep up the good work.
Likewise, brother. Have a good one.
You too. Take care.
All right. Take care.